Welcome to Nightchild Talks Prince, uncut and unscripted. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and, well, we won't go there because as Prince said, if he can give up swearing, then everybody can give up swearing. Anyway, welcome back to Nightchild Talks Prince Uncut. Got a few topics today. Really want to talk about how people get into Prince and how people discover Prince nowadays. I'm going to talk about how I got into Prince and how people get into Prince now and ask, is enough being done to get new fans? Is enough being done to kind of attract people who haven't heard Prince's music to Prince? Also going to talk about Prince's social media stance and how that plays into how he was discovered as an artist in terms of a lot of people, you know, couldn't find him online. It was the stance against YouTube, against Spotify, and how that may have affected people discovering his music. Also, we're going to wrap up in the second half with a rundown of the top 30 Spotify tracks for Prince, and also going to do a top 20 YouTube videos for Prince to see what's popular. Are there any surprises? Is it as we expected? And what does it tell us about how the world looks at Prince? Are they sort of, you know, tending towards the same sort of tracks, or are they perhaps discovering things in a way we wouldn't expect? But anyway, the beginning. I was 14 and I remember it like it was yesterday, literally. I was 14, 1989, and I was playing with a ball in my yard outside my house. And I had my headphones on, as I always did. At that point, I was kind of, just really finding my way with music. I had followed Michael Jackson. I was kind of listened to some of my mum's albums she had. Those days were like George Benson and Hot Chocolate and even Barry Manilow. But my world changed when I heard Bat Dance. Just that voice, Get the Funk Up, and the beginning of that track changed my life. It was like an alien had landed. You know, it was something I'd never heard a song like it. I mean, in a way, Bat Dance is not a particularly typical Prince song. I mean, it has Prince all over it, but it's not a typical song. And it was amazing. It was this mashup of sounds, of shrieks, of audio clips from the Batman film, which was huge at that time. And it just changed everything. I couldn't take it all in. There was so much going on. These were the days where I was listening to the radio on my Walkman, and you could sort of record things off the radio and things like that. But I just heard it as part of the charts of the rundown, and it just blew me away. Over the next couple of weeks, I went out to my local video store. I got everything I could of Prince, which at the time was obviously, you know, Sign of the Times, Love Sexy, video, those kind of things. I really got those. But then I also had a friend, because I want to know more about this guy. I want to know more about Prince. I didn't really know anything about him. And I had a friend who was a huge Prince fan. It was kind of a friend of my mum's. And he recorded, gave me a copy. I'm not going to say anything, but that's not totally official. But anyway, he gave me a copy of every album up until that point. So back from For You right up to sort of Love Sexy. And it was amazing because he gave them all to me on cassettes. The only thing he didn't do is he didn't put the dates, so I didn't know what order they went in. So I kind of, in my mind, this is obviously pre-internet. I mean, I could have probably gone to a library or something, but I didn't. I just tried to work out in my mind what order all these albums were in. Some I kind of like For You and Prince, I placed as early on. Obviously, Love Sexy later on. Some I didn't have a clue about, like Parade. I didn't know where Parade fit within the Prince discography. I had no idea. I was like, where does this go? But the point was, this was incredible. This artist, I couldn't understand. And the thing I was fascinated, but at that point, I didn't know what to make of it all. And it was when I watched Sign of the Times, the video, the concert video, I think that was the moment, if I had to pinpoint it, when I knew things were never going to be the same. After watching the first song, Sign of the Times, just incredible, just extraordinary. But I still couldn't quite get it. And then we had Play in the Sunshine and obviously Housequake. And by the time Housequake came on, I was sold. Here was this man singing, dancing, playing guitar, you know, playing piano. Just incredible. And Housequake sounded like nothing else. For me, Prince has said this before, that funk is in the spaces. And it was the thing about lots of his songs. There was this space, this minimalism, and I loved it. It sounded different to everybody else. These drum beats sounded alien and different to anything, really, I'd ever heard. I mean, this is obviously something Prince is known for. You think of When Doves Cry, I think of Sign of the Times. His drum programming is amazing. And the space in these songs where the funk lives, just incredible. And from then on, my journey was just amazing. The same friend who recorded all those albums for me. I should point out, I did go out and buy them after that. So I did do my thing. I paid my dues and paid for the albums. And he took me to the Nude Tour in 1990. And seeing the Nude Tour, seeing Prince live, I loved that look he had at the time, the kind of graffiti bridged look. And he played lots of songs from the Batman album, like The Future, and, you know, just incredible. And seeing songs like Question of You, and seeing him play Electric Man, seeing him 1999, and the look, the energy, the dancing, I was sold. And that was it. I was obsessed. You know, the years that followed, buying Graffiti Bridge, you know, I remember at the time I went to buy Graffiti Bridge with my mum. I was still a kid. She drove me there to the superstore where I actually got it. And there's a choice between vinyl and cassette. And because we had a cassette player in the car, I bought the cassette because I thought I wanted to listen to it quicker. I wanted to listen to it on the way home. And so I didn't buy the vinyl. I bought the cassette. And when Morris Day comes on and you get kind of release it, going to get this party funking right, I had to explain to my mum that he said funking and not something else. Otherwise, she was looking a bit concerned. But at that point, that was it. You know, the ride of my life in terms of, you know, getting into Graffiti Bridge, then you've got Diamonds and Pearls and the videos, and, well, the whole thing started. It really changed everything for me. But nowadays, it's different. I mean, you know, most people tend not to listen to the radio. When you discover new music now, it's more likely to be obviously online. You know, if you are a young person now, you're probably more likely to discover Prince through TikTok or, you know, seeing a performance possibly at the Grammys or possibly even just listen to Spotify and it recommends Prince. Now, this is interesting because Prince obviously had a kind of strange dichotomy or a relationship with social media, because on one hand, technology is something Prince loved. He was very ahead of his time. You think of Crystal Ball, 1998, the kind of like the idea of selling an album entirely online. He was one of the first to do that. He was, you know, given a Webby Award for, you know, his kind of embrace of technology. And he was a pioneer in lots of ways. You think of the interactive sort of experience game he made back in the days of floppy disks. And he was somebody who embraced technology. He wanted to get new ways to get his music out there and to cut out the record company, to go direct from Prince to the fans, to cut out that middleman, which means he could release as much as he wanted or as little as he wanted, and he could do it instantly, or, as he famously said, give it away for free, because he wanted that freedom, and freedom was key to what Prince was doing. But on the other hand, I think it was difficult because he also felt, and now it's interesting because so many things of Prince at the time he was ridiculed for. He was ridiculed for calling himself a slave. He was ridiculed for standing up to streaming platforms. And he decided that, you know, they weren't paying artists enough, something you hear from artists now. I think Kanye is a good example. Recently, he said he's not going to put his album on streaming because they don't pay enough. And Prince was very clear about that with Spotify, you know, back in the day, all the other previous streaming platforms. Prince felt they weren't paying enough. They weren't valuing the art enough. They weren't, you know, respecting the artists. They were making money for businessmen. Now, it's interesting because on one hand, he was right. And everybody knows that now. Everybody knows he really sacrificed a fair amount in terms of fame, but also in terms of just the his life could have been so much easier. He could have just said, right, I'm going to do what the record company tells me. I'm going to go on tour. I'm going to do an album a year. I'm going to promote it, release singles. He could do that. But he decided this was more important. And it was important that someone like him, someone with his fame, you know, took this stance. But obviously that came at a cost. And the thing is, Prince sometimes would embrace, you know, streaming. He would occasionally put songs out there like Stare. He would embrace the Tidal platform where he felt they paid a better fee to artists. So in one way, his embrace of technology really helped kind of break down some of those doors. But the trouble is when you're the first person to do it, that comes at a cost because you're trying to work out all the problems. You're trying to work out all the logistics. You're trying to work out how to do this thing. It's easier to come second or third and fourth and learn from people. But the thing about that is he took a lot of his videos, a lot of his music off YouTube, off Spotify. And that meant at that time, that was how a lot of people discovered music. And simply it wasn't there. So whilst other artists around that kind of era, but also kind of artists he was compared to, I mean, I don't like comparing artists because every artist is different, but they were getting a lot of traction on social media. But because Prince wasn't there, a lot of people missed out. They didn't see him on YouTube. They didn't see him on Spotify. They didn't see him on lots of platforms. And I started my YouTube channel in part because Prince wasn't on YouTube and I wanted to talk about Prince and you couldn't play his music. So the next best thing I could do was talk about Prince. Obviously, later on, towards the end of his career, Prince launched his own Twitter account and he became more accessible and used social media in different ways. But it's key to discovering artists, and that's something that obviously, since his passing, has changed. There's a lot more embrace of mainstream platforms from the estate because obviously they have to get, you know, Prince's work out there. But now you wonder, how do people discover Prince? You know, I see one of the biggest things as actually react to videos. You see lots of people watching these videos where people listen to Purple Rain for the first time or listen to Little Red Corvette. I saw someone listen to Lady Cab Driver for the first time, which was an amazing experience to see them, their eyes bulging, their mouth open, listening to Lady Cab Driver and wondering what was going on. So it's incredible. So it's interesting. And I'd like to ask people out there, is enough being done, do you think, to kind of attract new fans? There are different ways you attract new fans. Like I say, they might see a performance of Purple Rain at America's Got Talent. They might see Prince's song used in movies like Coming to America, the second movie. And, you know, they may see it that way. They may see it on adverts. They may see it on social media. They may see it as a recommendation on Spotify. But is enough being done? Because the one thing I would tell you is that the Prince community has a wide range of people in it. There's no doubt. But they are aging. I hate to say it. But generally, the feedback we get from YouTube is that they are largely aging. There is a youth kind of movement. And that's, you see that on Twitter, on X, sorry. And you see that sometimes on Facebook, but I don't know how big it is, but it's wonderful when you see new people come into Prince and, oh, the knowledge, the enthusiasm, the way some people interpret Prince's work. I've seen people kind of dress up in the rave era outfits and to use clips of Prince. And I've seen a dance troupe do an amazing version of Musicology and doing like a dance group interpretation of it, just brilliant. So I think the creativity is immense. It's off the scale. So I just wonder, is enough being done compared to perhaps other artists. Other artists seem to have an easier time getting out there. I don't know why that is. Some people have told me that, you know, they were told when they were younger, well, Prince was very sexual and they kind of, that was an issue, or, you know, some people sort of feel it's too intimidating because there's so much Prince work. Where do you begin? I don't know whether any of these things are true or not, but it's really interesting. I just hope that his work continues to get out there, because he changed my life. I think he changed so many people's lives, and I really want people to be able to discover him. Now, following on from that topic, for part two, I just want to briefly talk about the top 30 Prince Spotify tracks, and we'll also go on to some of the YouTube tracks and just seeing if that can tell us anything about how people are discovering Prince and what they're kind of discovering. I was going to give you a quick rundown of what they are. Now, I'm quite gutted because there's a couple of tracks just outside the top 30 that I adore. 32 is Adore, the 2020 remaster, and 31 is Sometimes It Snows in April. So, anyway, number 30 on the Spotify top 30 of Prince tracks is When Doves Cry, the 7-inch single edit from the 2017 remaster. And I will notice the theme of a lot of these tracks is the remaster has been pushed out to streaming platforms. So that's actually very high up, and that people are listening to the remastered new version rather than the original. 29, I think, personally, is the biggest anomaly. It's Stare. Now, the thing is, Stare was a track that Prince pushed out to Spotify and got out there. And so it's one of the most modern tracks that really made it out there. And it proves that with Prince's sort of, you know, embrace of streaming platforms, how a song could really be embraced. Now, Stare has 14.6 million streams. So, you know, that's pretty good. I mean, he pushed it, got it out there, and that's, you know, what could be done with a modern track. 28 is Get Off, with 15.7 million listens. 27, Sexy MF, with just over 16 million listens. 26, we go all the way back to Soft and Wet, which is interesting, because Soft and Wet obviously a classic song, but way back at the beginning of Prince's career, and that's just over 17 million plays. That's 25. We are going to Pop Life again. You know, interesting, because it's a well-known track, but it's kind of obviously going way back there to the mid 80s, and that's an interesting interesting choice. That I think interesting that, you know, I love that song because it's such a great juxtaposition of deep dark lyrics and this upbeat poppy song. 24, which isn't a surprise to me, The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, a huge hit. His UK number one hit. I remember at the time listening to the charts, and it got to number two and he wasn't there, and I thought he's either dropped out of the charts or he's number one for the first time in the UK as, you know, as the artist, his first release to show Warner Brothers what he could do without them. And Most Beautiful Girl in the World, 17.7 million plays. Then we go to 23, which is 1999, the 7-inch stereo edit of the 2019 remaster, 18.1 million plays. Now we're entering Purple Rain territory. Number 22 is Take Me With You. Number 21, Baby I'm a Star. So you get to the top 20 and you're sort of heading towards a few Purple Rain tracks. We're up to about 18, 19 million plays now. Number 20, I Wanna Be Your Lover, the single version, 19.5 million streams. Followed by 19 is Erotic City, Let's Go Crazy, B-side edit of the remaster, 20.1 million streams. 18, You Got the Look, 2020 remaster. Controversy is at 17, classic song, love that chicken grease guitar, superb. 16, The Beautiful Ones. 15, Darling Nikki. 14, which is quite in keeping, is Diamonds and Pearls. We're now up to about 23.7 million streams. Diamonds and Pearls, obviously a classically you know, popular an album, which is really promoted, and Prince produced such high quality videos for. He really wanted to smash that kind of 5 million sales and show Warner's, you know, what he could do. 13 is the 2020 remaster of Sign of the Times with 26 million streams. Then 12. Wow, Nothing Compares to You. Now, has a song ever had a second life, it's got to be Nothing Compares to You. Obviously, Prince gave it originally to the family. Then Sinead O'Connor kind of made a big success of it. Prince reclaimed it. And that's up to 28.6 million streams. Number 11, Cream. That's not a surprise because of the Cream, number one, superb song, real fan favourite in terms of the casual fan. You know, all kinds of fans love Cream. I think it's interesting that, you know, he could just write these amazingly addictively catchy songs, you know, just almost seemingly at will. Now, we're in the top 10, interesting, because number 9 and number 10 are both Little Red Corvette. Number 10 is the 2019 remaster, and number 9 is the 7-inch edit of the 2019 remaster. So people are listening to both there. So you've got 46 million streams for the 2019 remaster and 53.5 for the 7-inch edit. Number 8, I Want to Be Your Lover, which is not the single version, but the album version. That's 78.8 million. Number 7, I Would Die For You, with 80 million streams. Now we get into the big numbers. Number 6, Let's Go Crazy, 113 million streams. Number 5 is 1999, but it's the 2019 remaster. And that's 124.9 million streams. Number 4, I guess you're already guessing probably what these four are going to be, but we'll see. Number 4, Raspberry Beret, 218 million streams. Number 3, no surprise, When Doves Cry, 238 million streams. Number 2, Kiss, 402 million streams. And of course, no prizes, I'm afraid, on this podcast for guessing what number 1 is, Purple Rain, 453 million streams. Now, I'm going to quickly run down what the difference is with YouTube. Now, I've got to say, this is interesting because YouTube, the most popular video, is not official. The most popular video actually on YouTube, aside from obviously While My Guitar Gently Weeps, which, you know, you could argue, you know, is going to be the biggest selling, kind of biggest viewing Prince video ever. I mean, it's just incredible. The amount of people who come up to me who, you know, don't know Prince hugely, and they said, come up to me and say, oh, did you see his performance with that? It's amazing. He's incredible. I mean, that's up to 69 million views on George Harrison's channel. And people say, this is incredible. You know, you've got to, this is brilliant. And yeah, it is. But for Prince fans, this is what he did. It's what he did all the time. So it's not a surprise to us. But for other people, it's a real surprise. And they're like, this is incredible. But anyway, other than that, the biggest, the most viewed video I could find is not on the official channel. It's on a channel called The Codfather, and it's the official video for Prince's Purple Rain. Bizarrely enough, it's on an unofficial channel, and it has 249 million views. So that's bizarre that it's on an unofficial channel, but and it's got the most views. But somebody put it up there, people loved it, and for some reason the Prince Estate didn't say, no, we want that. I think they've claimed, you know, the royalties, but they haven't put it on their channel. I don't know whether there's a problem because it's obviously from the movie, if there's a kind of rights issue or what, I don't really understand, but it's not on the official channel. So it's quite bizarre. But I'm going to really quickly run down the top 20 YouTube, and these are obviously the official the official videos. So ignoring those two we just talked about. Number 20, Nothing Compares to You, with 11 million. 19, Get Off, 11 million. Cream, live at the Webster Hall, that amazing acoustic performance that Prince did for MTV, 11.9 million. Call My Name, which I think is a really beautiful video. I think Call My Name, I love. I think Somewhere Here on Earth is one of the most sumptuous videos too. But Call My Name, 12.2 million. Bad Dance, obviously one of my personal favourites. And I think his whole videos around those times were just brilliant. Bad Dance, you know, Party Man. Even the live performance of Electric Chair, amazing. So Bat Dance has 12.9 million. The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, 14 million. I also love that in the UK, when he got to number one with that, on Top of the Pops, he decided to play the Mustang mix for Top of the Pops instead of the original, which is so Prince. 14, we've got Purple Rain, live at Paisley Park, 1999, the kind of rave Unto the Joy Fantastic version. We've got Diamonds and Pearls at 13 with 15 million views. Cream at 12. 11, Nothing Compares to You. 10, I Want to Be Your Lover. 9, You Got the Look. We're up to about 26 million views now. Then we get into number 8, When Doves Cry. 26 million. That's the extended version. Let's Go Crazy, 28 million. 1999, classic video, 30 million. Then we get into the top 5 of Little Red Corvette with 42 million. Purple Rain Live, 59.3 million. Raspberry Beret, 66 million. Kiss, 72 million. And When Doves Cry, 102 million. Now, on one hand, they're amazing figures. If you think all the people who watched that, enjoyed that, it's incredible. On the other hand, they're nowhere near where they should be compared to kind of other artists around. And you consider the work Prince created, they're nowhere as high as you would expect. I would say two things. First of all, obviously, he started from behind in terms of taking those videos off. So in a sense, those figures would be, you know, perhaps expected a little bit. But second of all, you look around on Facebook and loads of these videos have huge views, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of views on videos. You go to TikTok, they're getting big views. You know, they, when you look at the whole social media kind of platforms, then, you know, they are getting a lot of views. And the thing is about Prince, it's not like he's only got 10 videos. He's got, so you see every day something on online, a concert, a clip, a rehearsal, a song. There's so much to kind of go into. So on one hand, I'm somebody who doesn't care, you know, about figures. It's never about figures. You don't love an artist because of figures. If you listen to a song, you either dig it or you don't dig it. You don't think, well, I need to find out how many, you know, how many albums or how many copies that song has sold before I like it. Of course not. You just love it or you don't love it. If Prince only sold, you know, 100,000 records in his lifetime, we would all still love him. So it's not about figures. But it is interesting to see where the kind of general public are, perhaps where, you know, the kind of listening is. And it is still very much obviously going by that. It's very much Purple Rain. There's very little outside of Purple Rain, perhaps a bit of Diamonds and Pearls. When you ask people who sort of aren't really hugely into Prince, what Prince tracks they know, and it will be Purple Rain, When Doves Cry, Kiss, maybe. You occasionally get like Diamonds and Pearls, maybe even the Most Beautiful Girl in the World, Raspberry Beret. But it's, for me, frustrating because there's so much to Prince. And it's I can understand because it's almost overwhelming. But I think highlighting a lot of those less appreciated aspects of Prince is something I'm really keen to do. Whether you talk about The Slaughterhouse, whether you talk about Chocolate Invasion, whether you talk about, you know, Rave Into the Joy Fantastic, whether you talk about, you know, so many of his abandoned projects he was sort of working on, or they morphed into something else. You know, I mean, how many people in the general public know about, you know, the Rainbow Children? How many people know about Lotus Flower? How many people know, you know, about some of these really interesting albums? You know, you think about Emancipation, you know, you think about the Come album, and it's just really interesting to see how much more Prince needs to come out. And in a sense, we don't want it to be just the Purple Rain guy. I think that's what I'm trying to say. We just don't want it to be just the Purple Rain guy, because as amazing as that was, and incredible as that was, that's a, you know, that was a year in Prince's life. He did so much. And I've always said that, you know, it's a book, and you wouldn't just read, you know, a couple of chapters of a book in the middle and just leave the rest. You know, no story makes sense without all the chapters, and you have to listen to all the chapters to really understand what Prince is saying. And people sort of, you know, you understand his life, you understand his philosophies, you understand what he's trying to say. He's very open in his music. People say, oh, he's a reclusive guy, you don't know, get, you can't really know him. Well, you can. There's so many ways you can know him, and his music is the key one. And like I said, you know, it only makes sense if you grab it all, listen to it all, indulge in it all, because there's so many things. There's going to be something you love, whether you're into jazz, funk, you know, rock and roll, rap, you name it, classical music, whatever. Prince, you know, he's the master. So, sorry I ranted on that bit. Not ranted, but got carried away. I just want to say one really quick thing now. Thank you to everybody. I was really worried about doing this. It's not my natural thing. But you know what? I'm just enjoying myself. Just enjoying it. I really am. Just been able to talk about Prince, just ramble on. I don't have to worry about all the technical side, and I can just get my thoughts out there and just thank this community who has been so amazing to me. I've had so many amazing comments. Each comment genuinely means the world to me. I am just incredibly lucky, incredibly spoiled, and just so proud to be a part, a small part of this amazing community of people. And you are my friends, and you've always been there since I started this, as some kind of nervous, crazy, autistic guy who hated speaking, hates the sound of his voice, and just, you know, you're there. So I want to thank you, every one of you, and I'll see you incredibly soon. Thank you.